Yeah, so I said thank you for inventing the graham cracker.
Okay. It's, yeah.
But it just but turns out it wasn't him.
He didn't do it.
You know how many hundreds of s'mores I've eaten thinking of this person because of the I thought they invented it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, it's an easy mistake to make. I probably would have done the same thing.
I am still going to eat some s'mores.
How many s'mores did you say you ate? That sounds like a lot of s'mores, like
486.
Oh my goodness! Did it affect your blood sugar? You must have spiked it pretty high.
I don't pay attention.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. We're rolling.
All right, let's roll. I'm Rich.
And I'm Mark.
And we are two guys on Block Island. Well, welcome to another episode of our podcast, listeners. Thanks for tuning in. And a thank you to our guest today, who is someone I've known for quite some time now.
And he also, to be clear, he did not invent the graham cracker.
He did not invent the graham cracker.
Okay.
No, I found that out. You know, it was embarrassing.
All right.
Very embarrassing.
Gotcha.
But, He is a great guy, and he's one of those ones where if somebody tells me they don't like him, then I'm a little nervous about them.
Absolutely.
You know, because there's just no reason to not, you know, like this gentleman.
Well, who are we talking about?
We're talking about David Graham. Hi, David. Nice to have you on the show.
Nice to be here.
All right. Awesome.
How's things?
Things are good.
Good.
I have a comment to make about the graham cracker thing.
Okay.
Oh, what is it?
I was in Florida, maybe 60-some years ago.
Okay.
Just out of college, and my then girlfriend, whom I'm still married to, was there. My younger brother was there. My mother was there from Boston paying for us all. And I tried to get into a restaurant with a reservation in one of the fancy schmancy places in Delray or one of those communities. And they told me they had nothing open, just couldn't accommodate us. So I went home with the story, and we can't get into that place we're trying to get into. So my younger brother, who had a lot of moxie, called the restaurant, and the woman on the telephone said to him, "And what grams are you?" He said, "We are the cracker people." We got in.
You're kidding. It worked.
It worked.
And have you used it
since? I
was
ready to change my name to Nabisco.
Have you used that scam since?
I never had the moxie to do it.
It's a good word, yeah. Moxie.
Try it at Eli's some night, you know, when they're really backed up.
Oh, I just call Rosemary and say, if I can't get in, you've got a lot of
gas. That's true, yeah. That's true. That's small, true. But maybe on the mainland somewhere.
Yeah, well, I worked with her for so many years after I retired.
Okay.
We have a special.
Well, that's kind of an oxymoron sentence there. I worked for many years after I retired.
Yeah.
You know, it's the whole catch thing. So, let's start with, can you tell us about how you came to find Block Island and find yourself here? And like, when was your first?
My first visit to Block Island was in 1952. I was, 36, 46, 52, 16. Maybe it was 1950.
Nobody checks our facts.
I went to a military secondary school in New York, and I came from Boston. It was kind of alien at the time. And one of my chums, one of my best friends, his family summered here. And we lived on the Cape in the summer. My family came from Boston and went to the Cape for the summer. And he invited me for a week, and we stayed. The house they rented is now the Rose Farm Inn, the main house
behind
the Atlantic. It didn't have a porch then.
Yep.
And so his dad sent a plane over to Hyannisport to pick me up.
Ooh. Fancy.
And my mother lost it. She said to a friend of hers, this kid has never had an inexpensive idea. And now someone has sent a plane to pick him up. And I came each summer, 52, 53, 54, and 55.
Wow.
Raved about it, loved it to bits, but my dad was other than his business, golf was his life, and he belonged to a couple of different clubs, and there wasn't that kind
of golf course here.
Yeah.
So I couldn't talk her into coming and have a look. And in the late 70s, I came back with a friend of mine who was building here. And he wanted me to, he just wanted me to contribute what I could to the thinking I have some taste.
That, as long as somebody else thinks you have taste, that's right, all that matters in this world.
Yeah.
So I kind of helped them out about, you know, where not to put the windows so you can put a bed in the room, you know. Create wall space and all that kind of stuff.
Oh.
And then we came out house guesting maybe 2 or 3 times a summer.
Now, where was that house?
It was up on the plains opposite the Vale. It used to be, it was owned originally by Harriet Phelan, and she, Harriet Payne Phelan, and she deeded it to Blake, who developed, it was the first cluster housing kind of thing, I think, out here.
Tidbit I didn't know.
26 acres, 9 houses, each one is on probably roughly 3/4 of an acre. And that comes up, I think, to like 5 or 6 acres. And the rest of the 20 is common land and open and will remain open forever. Still does.
Huh.
Wow.
And
Colleen and Jeff live up in that neighborhood? Ernst?
Colleen's parents.
Colleen's parents. Okay, that's right. The Deweys.
The Deweys. Okay. They lived across from us. We were house number 4 of the 9 that are up there. And that happened one Sunday. We were leaving the Lynches to go back to New York. And we just said to each other, you know, why do we have to leave?
Yeah.
And in about a month, we bought the property next door.
Wow.
Oh, very nice.
Now, did you, after those initial few visits with your school friend, and the gap up until the late 70s, did you come back? That was it.
I did not.
Those initial visits and then a long period of not visiting.
Absolutely.
Blood. Wow. Yep. Okay. And then you came back and...
It must have been that's a big span for change. Was there, or was change slower?
Like? It was. And I got married in 1960. So that's like 5 years after I left.
Yeah.
And we had babies and we had to get a house and
stuff.
All this,
You did the life thing for 30 years and then.
Exactly. And then, and I worked in Manhattan. I worked for television.
And you've been married 63 years?
63 years.
63 years.
Wow.
How about that, huh?
Amazing. Yeah. And what was your gig in the city?
I worked for CBS television.
Oh, what'd you do?
I started in an area called cost control, which probably makes my mother turn over because I never had any cost control. And I went from that to something else, and then I went into the radio division for a couple of years, and then I went into sales in television.
Okay.
And
how did you like being in the television world?
It was great.
Yeah.
It was in the beginning. It was a little. I was only in my 20s. I wasn't unsophisticated, but I certainly wasn't ready for the New York advertising world.
Yeah.
And the older guys would take me along for lunch or something, you know.
AKA martinis.
At least 3.
Yeah.
And, you know, and make the sale.
Yeah.
Always made the sale.
Yeah.
And I became one of them.
Like the Mad Men? Like Mad Men, right?
About 5 years after that, I was in the business.
Wow.
You know who we had a guest on? McMillan.
Right.
Yeah. Are you familiar with him?
Chuck?
Yeah, Chuck.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, we had him on, and he was a Mad Men, too.
He was in the ad game as well
in
the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. I didn't know Chuck well. Yeah. I knew his wife better.
Okay.
Who was a very remarkable person.
Whom
he took great care of.
Yes.
He's a good,
he's an amazing guy.
Impressive.
Yep.
Definitely. We talked on our podcast. So his twins, they had come to Block Island, built a house, I believe. One trip out with the twins, they ran into my grandmother, Marie Johnson. Do you remember her probably from church?
Her name is familiar.
Yeah. Well, she was always in church. I know you're a faithful man with church. And
I try. I'm not that good, but I try.
I think you're doing okay. We'll get to that.
Okay.
So the twins, my grandmother was their third grade teacher in Brooklyn. And they had no idea that, so they did, Mrs. Johnson, what are you, why are you here? You know, and that was a coincidence of the families, you know, meeting. And Chuck's wife, Toby, right? Toby actually ended up working in the same school that my grandmother did, I think doing art or something like that. But yeah, that was a remarkable coincidence.
My house was on the house tour one year that the, I forget who puts that house tour on in the summer. It's one of the clubs.
Gardeners Club or something.
And my house was on the tour, and Toby was one of the ladies that was, you know, there and so forth. And I showed up, and she said to me, David, normally the owners don't, you know, come to these things. And I said, there's nothing normal about me, Toby. And I'm going to listen to what they have to say. And I mingled, and, you know, I got some very interesting feedback.
Yeah.
Did you put on, like, the waiter costume and serve drinks?
I just looked like I was, you know.
Yeah. You were absorbing. Yeah.
Around.
Kind of absorbing your own house.
Blended in.
A fellow who was there, younger than I think, it looked at these prints that were hanging over doors. It was sizable, about four of them, about that big of the one that, like, of that boat.
2x5.
They were big.
Yeah.
And he asked me where I bought them, and I told him I bought them at some art shop in New York and so forth. They were just effective. And he said, my parents have the originals.
Oh, there's a coincidence.
I wish I could tell you whose they were, but I can't.
Wow.
You can't remember the name.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was that kind of thing that went on during the house tour that was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you like doing the house, like having your house on the tour? Was it weird?
Yeah. I did. I thought it was good. I had a little business on the side, like my friend who asked me to come out here and take a look at the house he was building. I had a design business that I conducted on weekends and nights.
Really?
Yeah.
And how did you get it? Were you in the design? I mean, because you were in the television world.
Exactly.
And then, so that was the design. Like, now, are we talking architecture or like interior design, decoration?
A little bit of each. Yeah.
And was that just a hobby or a passion of yours?
I came home from work one night. We had lost a baby, and my wife said, I'm going to take this painting course at the high school. It's on Mondays and Wednesdays from 7 to 9 or whatever it was. And I thought, I'm going to go to design school. And I went to the New York School of Design and enrolled, and I went the same two nights she was out painting. I was going to design.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
No moss growing on this stone.
Yeah.
And I got, you know, I got accredited and what have you, and did a lot of work in my friends' houses and like that.
Well, you know what? You strike me. I've always tried to come up with a word, but you strike me as a tasteful fellow. You know, you
that would be something I would like.
You are. Yeah. I think you are. You always look put together. Mark and I were having a conversation about, like, you know, and I'm a prime example, if you could see me right now, of the lack of extraordinary care of our appearance that Americans tend to have versus he was over in Italy. And I think you would fit right in over there. You're always, you know, dressed well and
prepared
to be seen.
I love Italy.
Yeah.
There you go.
It was great. I just got back.
Look fine, incidentally.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I got my slippers on.
And nobody can see you.
Yes.
That's the idea. Thing,
yes. I almost wore mine.
Oh, you could have.
But the wife said, put shoes on.
They would have matched your pajamas very nicely. Right. So, when you were working in Manhattan, did you live in Manhattan as well?
So we lived, when we were first married, we lived in a rent-controlled pre-Depression apartment building in northern Neuchâtel, very close to Scarsdale.
Yeah.
But we did that because my wife had three sisters, and they all said, don't get a one-bedroom apartment.
Ah.
So we got a two-bedroom in this rent-controlled building, which was built before the Depression. So the rooms were big and nice. And so we had our first baby there, and we then bought a little house. And then in 1972, we built a house in the northern part of the county, right next to Ridgefield, Connecticut, a little hamlet called South Salem.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And we lived there until we built this place.
Ridgefield has a connection. I'm trying to think of what it is. Didn't Joe Szabo, wasn't he in a fish market there? Was it a Ridgefield fish market?
There was.
Yeah, I think that was his. He was partners in it. Like, if you go into Rebecca's, there's still a little sign up says Ridgefield Fish Market. I believe it was there.
I'll have to have a look.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the town.
The evolving thing that's really weird about it is the guy who bought my house on the plains over here and across from where the Vail Hotel was is from Ridgefield.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that's, you know, that's how it goes.
Very nice guy, too. We've had drinks together.
You know, there's only so many degrees to Block Island, I always say. No matter where you are in the world, somebody you talk to, their mother's been here. Or, yeah. You know somebody. So.
Yeah. When I first moved to South Salem, we moved into that house. I commuted to Manhattan before the commuter railroads were electrified. It was a diesel deal, and my commute was about an hour and 45 minutes each way.
Oof. Wow.
I had friends who said, "Are you nuts?" I said, "I don't care. I have 4 acres in the country.
Yeah,
what's important to me?
Yeah."
A lot of people who say that, "Are you nuts?" They just don't get it.
Yeah, they don't.
And so after you, when you built out here in the early '80s, you said,
"Yeah."
You left the old Salem. You sold the old Salem property.
We sold the Salem property
and moved here year round.
No.
Okay.
In the beginning, we sold the property.
Okay.
Largely to finance this deal.
Yeah.
And secondly,
good choice.
We had to find another place to live there because I was going to continue to work.
You were still working.
Working.
Gotcha.
So we bought a condominium in a very nice area in the next town. You had to be 50 to get in.
Okay.
And so it was, it was lovely, actually.
That's a good, that's a natural progression of things. Downsize
it's
here.
It's a smart progression.
It's a very smart progression. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's what we did.
Okay.
It's a gift to the next generation. So when we, my wife and I moved into the little cottage where my mom was, and, it's all we need. I don't need. And our mainland, we bought a little place on the mainland that you remember the Pine Lodge Village?
Certainly.
So we bought one of those, and it's just this tiny little cute cottage and one step up and in. And
we stayed there not frequently, but off and on during the building process.
Yes.
Before this place was
It was
finished.
A go-to Block Islander. Yeah.
I remember gas either. Didn't have a fireplace, but it had a gas stove, and the burners were exposed for some reason or other. So when you got into bed, you saw this fire going on the other side of the room. Didn't sleep much.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
that's a fire.
Was back in the day. It was more like glamping, like glamorous camping.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much is what this place was like. Yeah. I mean, it was. They basically stapled wood paneling on the 2x4s.
Sure.
And you literally, there was the big metal grate in the floor that would just heat would come out of. The old school. Everything was old school.
Yeah. It was great though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And particularly there was not a big group, but there were a group of people who came. We came every weekend, and in those days they had an 8:30 flight on Friday nights, which they no longer have.
Right.
And I could get a train in New York that got me off at the station. She'd be there in the car, and we would make it to the Westerly Airport 10 minutes before the flight left.
Yeah.
And we were over here in the kitchen by 9 o'clock.
So you took the daddy flight instead of the daddy boat.
Exactly. Yeah. Because there was no boat that late enough,
Right.
Yeah, I pushed the envelope a little and bugged out a little early, but I couldn't leave at 3.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That was the beginning.
So then when did you make the decision to move, full time here? Like, was it retired? Well, kind of retirement.
I got off the train one night, got home. The kids were, they were well out of school. And the daughter's getting dinner for the two of us. And we ate in our den in front of the tube so I could see the news and that kind of stuff. And she said to me, she had gone back to teaching when Megan, my younger one, went to college. And she, pretty close to pretty close to 20 years. And she said to me at dinner, I've told them that I'm not coming back. And I went, what? She worked in a learning disabled group and so forth and so on, at which she was very good. She said, I've really given as much of myself to them as I possibly can.
One of the smartest things is to know, to acknowledge when you know that it's time.
Exactly.
Yeah, with anything.
So I said, have you told them? Yes, I have told them. I've just told you that I've given them. I'm not coming back in September. This is like May. And I didn't believe it.
So you liar.
So the summer came, and then I began to believe it. She's not going back. So I said, what are you going to do? And she went, I'm going to move into our house on Block Island. And I went, the house that you didn't want me to build? Do I know So I went into the office within a couple of weeks, and the president of the network was a fellow that I knew very well, and I went in to see him, and I said, Joe, I'm leaving.
How was that?
He looked at his watch. He said, it's 11:30, even a little early for you.
He thought you meant for the day.
And, is there a plane to catch? Yeah.
And he said, go back to your office and do what you're supposed to be doing and so forth. So I waited about a week, and I went back and said, I'm going to do it. And he was very gracious about it. He said, I suppose we'll have to have an event. I said, yeah, I think you probably will have to have an event.
So we did. How many years have you been there?
Almost 45.
Wow. 45 years.
With the same firm and
CBS, right? You said?
Wow. Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
It was a very, for lack of a better word, a very classy network, because William Paley, that owned it, was a very classy gentleman and so forth. I've watched reruns of Seinfeld and Friends and the shows that were very big in the late
90s. Were there for that?
Oh, absolutely. Huh. The originals. And they would never have made it on CBS, because I look at the reruns and I'm absolutely spastic. I can't believe they get away with the stuff that they get away with. I mean, they talk about... about subjects that were not discussed in
on CBS. Public.
Yes. And you didn't see it on Archie Bunker was a big thing, but that it was different. There wasn't a lot of sex in Archie Bunker, and in the other shows there was.
And his, those shows, actually, I think that the creator of a lot of those shows recently
passed. Norman Lear.
Norman Lear.
He just died.
Just passed
away. And he... it was amazing. So their thing was, their shock value was tackling issues. And I thought that was really...
He was a brilliant satirist. Satirist. I mean, it was all satire.
But it was just brilliant.
Yes.
He was probably one of the most noted people that was ever in the business.
Yeah. And another guy who never stopped working. He worked right up until the day he died. Amazing. So, wow. So you were there through all that. That's really... That's cool. And did they give you the watch and all that stuff? Big party. How was the party? How was the retirement party?
The party was fantastic. The party was in a private level of a restaurant on 52nd Street. City people knew about it, but called Menestrello, and it was owned by two brothers from Italy, and fabulous food, and very attractive too. Right across the street from the side entrance of the Palace Hotel, which was owned by Leona Helmsley.
We remember her.
Yeah, she was hard to, she'd be hard to forget.
Yeah.
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 And that's where it was. And it's funny, we Dottie and I were in the city, maybe time passes very quickly and I lose track of it. Could have been 10 years ago, might have been 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I said, we'll definitely go into Menestrello for lunch, even though the boys sold it. It was such a great place. And it was an empty lot.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody offered them $10 million for it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure the restaurant was in a shorter building than's there now.
Yeah. Most of the old places are gone.
Yeah,
fabulous places.
Yeah,
gone.
So then you retire for real. yep. kind of. And then you come out here full time.
Right.
And then now the real shenanigans start. And now the real fun starts.
The thing about that, Mark, was I thought very seriously about it and said, Dara, I don't know whether you're going to like being by yourself, because I don't know whether I'm going yet, because I'm not going there without a job.
Okay.
And I called Gail Hall on the phone, and I knew her and Jeff pretty well. And I said to her, I'll do anything. Do you have a spot for me in the office?
In the real estate office?
Yep.
Yep.
And she said, let me call you back. She called me back the next day. When can you come? I said, well, I'm retiring on Friday. I'll drive up there on Saturday. I can come on Monday.
There it is.
And that's what I did.
Slacker.
And what were you doing for Gail at the...
I was taking care of rental reservations and so forth and so on until she talked me into a license.
Okay. Oh, so you did get your license and you sold license, real estate out yep, here. Yep, oh, wow.
Yep.
So it's that whole
last sale was actually a house on Sheffield Farm where I lived to a fellow that I knew.
Ah.
Bought a place that was about a year and a half ago.
And how many years did you work at the real estate office?
I worked there full-time till 2014.
Okay, that's a good run. And
got another retirement party.
I was going to...
So how many years? I lost track of my math.
Yeah, and when did you retire from CBS?
2001.
And then you retired from the real estate in?
2014.
Okay, so another.
So just another quick dozen years on top of your retiring.
Wow.
I've kept my license.
Have
yeah,
you?
Yeah. Why right. not? You yeah. know?
So comes, if you guys want to sell, handy. You could consider me.
Well, I don't own. I'm looking to buy. Let me know if you have anything in the $400,000 or $500,000 range. Yeah, that would be fantastic.
Oh, we do, but it's not here.
Okay, all right.
Did you mean specifically on
yeah,
Block
Island? Yeah, I was thinking here on Block Island. No. You know, I'm.
Yeah, but, just wait a few years. I'm sure it's all going to come.
Oh, it'll come down. Cheaper. Way down. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, how did you enjoy the real estate game?
I loved it.
I mean, you're a people person. You get to, you it, showed houses, it was, got to it, chat
it was,
with people.
It was great. It was great, and it was. It had a lot of funny moments, you know.
Like what?
We're
here for the funny stories.
Well, particularly in the season, Ballot Hall now is no longer in the rental business.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Ballot Hall got out of the rental business. But when the rental business was going on, that's another scene entirely. Yeah. You know, and they come in and out and so forth and so on, and there's house checking and abusive people and wonderful people and people that take care of other people's property and people that don't and so forth and so on. But in the early days, it was nothing like you guys have obviously experienced what it has become with the traffic and the bikes and the electric scooters and all the rest of the business.
Yeah.
But it was other things, mostly house oriented stuff. And the tenant would come in and usually on my day off, and they would say to the ladies in the office, the man said.
The man said.
And they would all say.
So they knew who you were talking about.
Yeah, exactly. That you mean David. Yes. He said, I doubt he said that. I doubt it.
What were some of the things they said that you said?
I'm not going to cross that.
He said we could have an extra 3 days for free because there was a bar of soap left under the sink.
We can have 18 people, even though there are only three or four bedrooms.
Yeah. 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 Common problem.
Yes, issue.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it.
That's
and
good.
I enjoyed the ladies, and I enjoyed the several wonderful friendships I've gotten out of it.
Yeah.
It was a good office, right?
Yeah, it was a great office.
I used to like go. I honestly would.
My license still hangs there.
I would 15 minutes when it was in the bigger office, obviously for rental purpose. And I'd go in there and sit there for 20 minutes.
Next to the bagel shop. Yeah.
I used to come in the back door.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I would because everybody was just fun to talk to and listen to, you know. Yeah. So,
and the bagel shop was very handy.
And
who were the ladies? It was Gail and
Michelle
Laurel.
Laurel Payne had not come yet. Laurel and Chelsea came later because they were much younger, and Chelsea was still in school, I think. But maybe she was out.
But they did overlap you, right? I mean,
both those, close to both those girls, and I'm very fond of them and their families. Laurel's a grandmother.
Oh, I know.
You know, yeah. And I've spent giving her the rib.
We're close. The grandchild was. We were one of the first visits on the baby's tour after Laurel, after Allie got settled in. And well, Derek, you know, is worked with me and for me, and then eventually bought my mowing business. But he's been hanging with me in a work capacity and other for probably since he was 14 years old. Okay. So I almost felt, I said, you know, I almost feel like this is, you know, my first grandchild because, yeah, you know, exactly. I remember Derek when he was, exactly. A little kid. So, so we were blessed.
Be careful what you wish for.
What do you mean?
Your first grandchild.
Oh, it's on the way.
I don't have any.
Oh, you don't?
But I have many little people,
right,
that I have fun with and can buy presents for and see and enjoy,
yep,
and go home, and I don't have to worry about anything.
There's
about
no contract.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly, as to how they're being brought up or what's being, yeah, done with them or whatever. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
Well, I think having young people around us at, you know, from little young to any age,
yeah,
I think it helped keep us young. I think that was one of the few 100% positive things for me about the restaurant business. As I got older, the crew kept coming in at 18, 19, 20 years old. And so you're talking to them. You're learning as you go, yep, what's going on at this level, at, yep, you know, at a younger age. And I think it really, you know, kind of helped keep the youngness going, you know, in me.
Oh, definitely. You know? Me too.
Yeah.
I had a birthday this week.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yep. I did.
May we ask how old you are?
Pushing 88.
Wow. You're kidding,
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
You look great.
That means I've been 87 for a week.
Yeah.
But the other thing is so much more dramatic.
He celebrated the 70th anniversary, yes, of his 17th birthday.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That makes sense.
That's, yeah, how we can put it.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. So we're going to listen to what our sponsors have to say. And we'll be right back with more of David. I'm really enjoying this conversation. So we'll be right back, listeners.
You know, I'm really looking forward to going fishing, Rich, but I don't know if we're both going to fit in this rowboat.
Wait, are you saying we're going to need a bigger boat?
Yeah, we're definitely going to need a bigger boat.
Hey, well, no problem. Why don't we just call Block Island Fishworks?
Yeah, you know, some of the best fishing in New England is in the waters around Block Island.
Hey, Fishworks is Block Island's number one fishing charter service.
And they have two boats in operation to accommodate your party.
Yeah, they do 3, 4, 6, and 8 hour trips on the Harley for up to 6 people with Captain Hank.
And they do 4 and 6 hour trips on the Jessica Kate with Captain Chris. Now that's for light tackle and fly fishing.
And they target all kinds of species. Bass, bluefish, black sea bass, scup, fluke, bonita, false albacore.
Yeah, and if you need tackle, bait, or some cool Fishworks merchandise, you can stop by the Tackle Shop located on Ocean Ave just past the bridge on the way to New Harbor.
Yeah, get ready to fish with BI Fishworks, but reservations are required for the charters.
But if you just want to fish from the shore, you can head into BI Fishworks and get some information about some of the best fishing spots all around Block Island.
Yeah, so check them out in person, online at bifishworks.com, or give them a call at 401-466-5392.
Let's go catch some fish.
Tons.
Hey, Rich.
Yeah.
I am starving right now. So I want to go somewhere that's intimate, but has really great food and kind of a fun atmosphere. So you know what? I think I'm going to head down to Eli's.
Well, they got to be doing it right. They've been there since 1994.
Yeah. And well, you know, a big part of it is because Chef Erica is always there and she's making some of the greatest dishes on this island.
Oh, they got some real island favorites in my book. The tuna nachos, the arugula salad with warm goat cheese. Oh, how can you go wrong?
Totally. And you know what's really cool is that the dishes are crafted with fresh local ingredients.
Yeah. And the menu, you know, it changes too. They have exciting seasonal changes to the menu. So, you know, what you find on there in the spring, it'll be different by the fall.
Yeah. And they're always great no matter what there. But hey, you know what I really love doing is sitting at the bar because they have an amazing wine list. And when Rosemary's bartending, she makes a Rosarita, if you know what I'm saying. Uh-huh. And she also, Rich, here's one of the things she does. She makes
martinis with just the right amount of ice shavings floating on the top.
Oh, I love that sheen, you know. Along with partners Brad and Ann Marthens, Eli's features a warm, friendly staff of local island service industry veterans, and they're there and they're going to make sure that your experience is absolutely perfect.
And they've got an extended season, March to November, and then they open back up for New Year's.
Yeah, I've been there for New Year's. It's fun.
Cool.
So, but they don't take reservations, so you will notice, because it's so great, there's a line out the door.
Yeah, I'm going to check the menu first online at elisblockisland.com.
Hey, Mark, can you tell my zipper is stuck down?
Rich, I think the entire island can tell that your zipper is stuck down. You know what you need? Our friend Liz, the traveling seamstress. She does all kinds of repairs. She also does top quality work when it comes to alterations, hemming, and almost anything else you can think of.
Even broken zippers?
Definitely broken zippers.
Oh, that's good to know. You know what I did know about the traveling seamstress?
You mean, other than the fact that Liz is one of the coolest, most creative people on Block Island?
Right. Besides all that, Liz can help with your Block Island website. So whether you're the bride or the mother of the bride, Liz can be there to make sure you look amazing. She offers steaming and pressing. And get this, she can do emergency calls as well.
Wait, so it's like a 911 for your wedding dress?
Exactly. But please don't call 911. You can call or text Liz at 401-466-4460.
Or you can stop in the shop and check out her handmade clothing and other goodies. The Traveling Seamstress is located right next to Diamond Blue Surf Shop at Bridgegate Square, a.k.a. the Four Corners.
Now, keep in mind, her schedule changes throughout the year. So check the website, travelingseamstress.com, for the most up-to-date hours, or you can even book an appointment right online.
That sounds great. Can we go get that zipper fixed now, please?
Please, it's feeling drafty.
Rich, what are you doing? Are you okay? Do you have a spasm in your leg or something?
Oh, no, man. I'm practicing my dance moves. I mean, I think this one's called a running man.
I'm not sure what I'd call that. What's with the sudden urge to shake your booty?
Well, I'm going to Captain Nick's tonight, and I want to be ready for the dance floor.
Ah, I love Captain Nick's. It's been Block Island's premier live music venue since it opened in 1976.
Well, my favorite is disco night every Monday night.
Me too. The best part is that everyone gets dressed up in their best 70s attire.
Oh, it is definitely dressed to impress.
And then on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, Captain Nick's features some of the best live entertainment you'll find on Block Island.
And Friday and Saturday night, they feature some of the favorite returning acts like Derek and the Funbags, West End Blend, The Blushing Brides. Love The Blushing Brides. Fever, Neil and the Vipers.
Yeah, and Friday and Saturday afternoons, if you want to get there a little early, Captain Nick's has acoustic entertainment on the deck.
And don't forget Sunday Funday with Young Guns, followed by more great live music inside.
Captain Nick's also has fantastic fun food options going all the way until 1 a.m. You know what that means? Late night food.
Yeah. And hey, if you're planning a special event, keep the party going at Nick's by renting out the second floor. It's perfect for wedding after parties, birthday gatherings, but just give them a call and you can reserve that for you and your friends.
Yeah, Captain Nick's also has a great selection of merchandise. You can pick up a cool hat, hoodie, or t-shirt.
Well, I hope to see you and all of our listeners down at Captain Nick's, located on Ocean Avenue across from the grocery store.
For a complete entertainment schedule, please visit CaptainNicksBI.com.
All right. Thanks to our sponsors, and thanks for you listeners for joining us, staying with us here with David Graham. We're having a fun conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always liked this guy.
Yeah.
So was there, when you first started, I'm going to just do the real two for a little bit longer, because I do know of some horror stories, and I was in the... I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the air, but I was in the caretaking business for many years. That's what I did. You know, the winter of not doing anything on Block Island was only fun for 1 year. So my brother-in-law left, and I started to watch a few houses, and by the end, I was watching 100. So occasionally, our paths would overlap, and it was always extremely weird stuff, you know.
Okay.
Because usually you kind of hand the house over to the realtor for the summer, and then it gets handed back. They're like, okay, we're done. All the tenants are gone. And then I would take over watching the house. And people are a little wacky when they do things. So you started just doing the rentals. You didn't have your license yet to sell. So you weren't even showing houses or anything.
No, I wasn't.
And the rental business is like the bread and butter of the office, is basically what I've heard.
It certainly was a huge part of it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's how you pay for your staff and your office and everything.
Yep.
Did you, even in the time when you started, it wasn't, you know, it was your second career and it was, you know, later, it wasn't super early, but the transition of people's demands of the houses, like the air conditioning, those sorts of things. Like, I mean, I remember when there wasn't a single rental house with air conditioning out here, you know?
Yeah, correct.
And you know, did people, were they already poo-pooing houses with no air conditioning when you started, or did that sort of evolve as it went?
That evolved kind of as I went. It wasn't in the very beginning. It was the first couple of years before I got my license, I would house check with Gail.
Yeah.
And that was an experience. I mean, it was that girl could reorganize a kitchen with 15 cabinets in 20 minutes.
Yep.
With all the plates and glasses and stuff, everything in its place.
While telling you what you should be doing while she's doing it at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah. She's another guest. She's been a guest on our podcast.
Oh, has she?
Yeah. She'll be a fun one for you to listen to. Yeah,
I will. I'll enjoy that.
Yeah, and I always, what I noticed is people who, they either had this deep appreciation for this house in Block Island or the opposite, and they just, you could just, the unpleasable guest that you could also get in a restaurant.
Finds fault with everything.
It just finds fault with everything. You know, they can't just say, oh, that drain stopper's not quite holding the water in for 2 hours, whatever. Exactly. I'm going to the beach.
Exactly.
Instead, it becomes a, you need someone up here right now. That drain stopper's not going well. You know, and it's like, come on, really? I mean, thanks for letting us know. Do you really want to spend a day of your week on Block Island with a plumber up there at the house? You know.
And recently I heard a story, a very short tale, which was one of many, many, many. But I thought, this is new. I hadn't heard this one before. The dishwashing liquid was not enough to take home back to wherever home was. So they poured it down the drain in the tub or the shower to get rid of it. And the next tenants arrived, and the showers were bubbling over the top.
Oh, my God. Why wouldn't you just leave it for the next tenant?
Yeah. Can you believe it? I can't. I'm like hysterical.
I can understand maybe not wanting a half a bottle of ketchup.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
dishwashing liquid.
Yeah. The people that come to clean, they take that stuff home and use it.
Yeah.
Mine, and I don't know if it was, Gail, your office, but another favorite story of mine I heard was, somebody found a hair in the tub, you know?
Yeah.
And they proceeded to tell you exactly what part of the body that hair came from.
Oh.
And, you know, a lot of hairs on our body look very, you can't determine.
Sure.
They went for the worst place,
right,
you know, that it could have possibly come from.
Right.
And it's almost like, what did you do? Have a DNA test done on that? And even that wouldn't tell you where it, like, that looks just like something off my back.
Yeah.
But
people will complain about anything.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think people get conditioned. If they get away with it somewhere and they get a $500 off the rental, they're going to try it again.
Yeah.
You know? Like, but I do believe some people will arrive, and the first thing they want to do is go through everything and make sure there's not a single, you know.
Oh, I had the first few summers that we owned our place, we rented it for August. We came for the month of July, and we rented it in August.
Yeah.
And we had a tenant who would arrive in the house, and in the first 30 minutes would make a list of what blind on which window wasn't working properly or what was happening, and so forth and so on. I never really understood until much later. She did it because she didn't want to be blamed when she left, that she was the one that broke it.
I see.
But did she wait? Did they wait till they were leaving to give you the list?
Oh, no.
That's what I mean. No, so no, why not give that? Like, to me, hey, by the way, the blinds in the bedroom on the east wall don't want to go all the way down.
Yeah.
And I would hope that the next year when I rent your house, now if it's still the same way, I got to say, come on now. I told, you know, it's not working. You're waiting, you're renting it again. But why tell you right away before?
Interestingly enough, that couple bought a house on Sheffield Farm.
Oh.
Two doors away from me. maybe it's 10 years or 8 years, something like that. And made quite a showplace out of it. Very nice couple.
Oh, nice.
We've seen them. But that girl made that list, and I'll tell you.
Well.
She was exacting.
Maybe part of it was helpful. You know,
it was
the other thing. The other thing.
Some people are just detail oriented.
Well, and some people don't tell you. And
right.
It's like, oh gosh, you know, like just tell me something's not work. I don't want it to be that way for the next person coming in. So don't be afraid to tell me that, you know, something's right. not functioning.
There's just, there's a way to lodge a complaint or to make somebody known, something known to someone. And there's a way not to do it. And, you know, it's just too many people
agreed
make a big deal out of nothing. And like you said, to your point, like they will spend time worrying about the time, the limited amount of time they have on Block Island that they're here on vacation, and they'll spend, even spending 5 minutes worrying about anything like that is too much, in my opinion.
I used to say that you divide. I do this on a mainland trip. We get back on the boat and I'm like, we spent $14 a minute today because you did the giant grocery run and the liquor run, you bought some furniture or whatever. And I always said that to people. I'm like, how much is a minute of your Block Island time worth? Do you really want to waste 60 minutes on something? I know. But, you know, you're not going to change people's personality.
Nah.
So that's, you know.
People are people. What are you going to do?
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. Now, you are a, here's one memory I have, and my memory is not the greatest, trust me, because, you know, things come up, but you're a very devout Catholic man, right? Or do you?
Consistent.
Consistent?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You don't want to, I get it. But were you one of the first deacons that, is it possible you were one of the first deacons I remember seeing other than the priest giving out the host?
I was not. As a matter of fact.
No, but I mean, were you one?
Yes.
Okay. Cause that's what I remember was you were the,
I am.
I remember going, who's that guy? cause it, you know, they didn't have anybody but priests, even in my diocese, the at communion time was a big, big church, St. Patrick's in Brooklyn, New York. Four more priests would come and join for the Eucharist. And then they would disappear in the mass or go back to the priest who was saying the mass.
Well, at St. Andrew's, I think this happened, not as a direct result of Vatican II, which was that convention that the Pope, his family name was Roncalli. He was Pope John the 23rd, and it came out as a result of the huge synod type thing that he arranged and had running during his very short reign, which was only about 5 years. The next step was the Eucharistic ministers coming out of the congregation of the church. The very first Eucharistic ministers at St. Andrew's were Paul Riker.
Okay, yeah.
Kathy, his wife.
Yep.
Pat Quealy, who just died.
Yes.
And Mary D.
Yes.
They were the four. And when Father Ray Keogh was here, who was a great friend, we traveled with him. And
one of my favorite people of all time. Yeah,
glorious soul, absolutely.
Just a priest that will work with you.
Yeah.
Like, he'll work. What do I got here with you?
And I have wonderful stories.
Oh,
I can't tell them here, but I have wonderful
stories. Oh, come on. You got to think of one you can tell. But I can tell one. Well, we'll get to it. Yeah.
Okay. You know. anyway, the current pastor of the church, under the direction of the new bishop in the diocese in Providence, appointed four new Eucharistic ministers. So we're now five.
Okay.
So everybody will be able to cover the summer easily. And in the winter, who's over here will take turns. They all live here.
He's a Eucharistic minister, and he used the word consistent.
Yeah.
He said, you're a pretty devout man. Consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
So you
I never wanted to create the impression, Rich, that I was any better than anybody else.
I understand. That's what I mean. I knew what you meant.
Because I'm not.
That's what I told Mark before you got here. I'm like, he is no better than anybody else. But
His middle name is Fun.
David Fun Graham.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Before I forget, interesting fact, the Graham Cracker was, I wrote it down. This is a piece of useless information, but since we're on the subject, the Graham Cracker was invented in 1829 by a reverend. Do you believe that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. I looked it up just for the heck of it.
Huh.
So
we have, one of my brothers was a reverend, but it wasn't him.
No, he was. That was a while back. Yeah. So we had Father Randall.
Yep.
Yep. And then was Father Kiyu right after him?
Right after him.
Okay. Yep. So Father Kiyu, Mark, was just...
I've heard stories about it. A lot of people have spoken about him and how great he was.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
You know, my grandmother... basically, I introduced Patty to my grandmother, who was a devout Catholic, no better than anybody else. And she had made Father Ray one of the, I forget the thing they wear around the neck that comes down the
stole.
Front. A stole. And, you know, it was one he would wear for special occasions and stuff. And she met my wife and said, you know, you got to marry that girl. Which in grandma I translated to, you're never going to do better than this. So, you got to take some advice from, you know, somebody who had some experience.
Absolutely.
So we went to meet Father Kiyu, but of course we had already lived together and whatnot. And he goes, well, we can make this work. Why don't you guys just separate for a little while and then we'll get you married? You know, but he was always like he wasn't like, you can't get married in this church. Oh, yeah. He wasn't a rule breaker, but he was... He found a way to sort of make it work. And if I recall, he might be the one that I asked him. I said, how come no altar boys? And he said, well, they won't let us have they won't let us have girls too.
Correct.
And he basically said, that's not fair. So I won't have anything. You know, I'm not going to, because before that there had been, I think the O'Brien boys were altar boys, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of who else, but yeah. So, I did a lot of years with the church. No big falling out, just not as, consistent
I understand.
As you are.
Well, it's changed a lot, too.
Yeah.
It's a lot of
like
things.
I said, I don't have any significant gripes or anything. But So do you have a fun Father Ray story?
Oh, I have a lot of them, but I can't. One I will tell you. I was on a trip with him. We were in Europe someplace on a ship. It was either in the Mediterranean or the Baltic or something. And there was a group of us, and he was there. And he didn't want the passenger list. They didn't print them anymore, but there was a passenger list if you wanted access to it. In the old days, they printed every ship that had a trip, maybe not transatlantic, but had a cruise trip to somewhere. They would have a printed passenger list would be in your cabin. If you go. On your screen on Google, a 1957 North Cape cruise on the RMS Coronia. My parents and all of us are listed on that thing, 1957. Oh, it's still there.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. But they didn't have this. They haven't had it for a long time. Must be
security reasons,
or whatever. But we're in an elevator. And we're going from the top deck to the dining deck or something. And, you know, he's got on khakis or regular trousers and a turtleneck and a blazer and train. And this woman on the elevator is talking to everybody. She's a real busybody, you can tell, and so forth. She gets to him and she says to him, and what do you do? And he said, I'm in sales.
Accurate.
And with that, the doors opened at another floor, and he got off. So, of course, that did the dinner table, or after dinner, I said to him, what was that all about? He said, well, you saw where it was going. I decided I had to get out.
Not a lie. Not a lie.
No, exactly.
Selling a little bit of love, a little salvation, a little bit of, you know, Jesus.
He was a wonderful person. He's the one who made me a Eucharistic minister.
Yeah, I believe that.
Because I said no, and he went, why? And I said, I don't think I can do that. I was brought up in the 1940s. You know, you never touched a consecrated host or anything like that. You just, that kind of thing wasn't done. And now you ask me to give it to other people? I don't think so. He said, if we all felt that way, there wouldn't be anybody to do it.
That's the kind of man he was.
Makes sense.
So, yeah. And that's just a matter of fact.
That's how I got into the minister racket.
Wow.
Yeah.
So does that mean, are you able to perform wedding ceremonies?
No, I mean,
can't do that. Okay.
No, they were, Mark, They wouldn't let me do that.
They wouldn't let you do that?
Yeah.
You'd be fantastic
I'd say to the groom, are you kidding me?
I'm going to give your name out at the town hall anyway. Yeah,
they wouldn't let me do that.
Just go to the groom or the bride. You're wearing that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. Understood.
Don't you know I went to school for design?
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. I'd probably say that.
Oh, my God.
Have you done any design projects out here? Have you done any work?
I've done a little, a little help here and there, but nothing really big. Because the main problem would be workrooms. Where can make people do this and do that? But people out here, there are people who do, who have it done, but they're not having custom-made bedspreads and draperies and carpeting and all that kind of stuff that goes into decorating a house.
What would you kind of call your signature style? What is the David Graham style? Would it be like a, classic New England with a twist, or modern New England, or like what, mid-century
what
would you call it?
It's very traditional.
Traditional.
Yeah.
Okay.
AKA
come and have a drink with us. My
classy.
Lars, twist my arm.
Lars Trodson says that I have the only house on Block Island that looks like a New York apartment.
Really?
Oh.
I would love to see that.
We sold the house. I was talking to Rich about this coming in the door. We sold that house in 2019, and we built a little place over on Coast Guard Road on a friend of mine's property.
Oh, okay.
And we kind of did it together.
Oh, cool.
And it's fine. It's really it's a great little place. Many of our companions and our friends walk into it, and the wife turns to the husband and says, "This is what we should have."
Yeah,
because they have they're in their 70s, so they may even be like me in their 80s, and they've got a 4-bedroom house with a lot of staircases. And while you can still walk around, that's why we did it.
Yeah,
we decided that we should downsize and do this while we're able to do it.
Right, very smart. Yeah.
So that's what we did, it's a very fun place.
Yeah.
And at the moment, it's a mess because I'm getting ready for Christmas.
Aha.
Oh.
What are the plans?
Well,
there's stuff all
everywhere.
Over the place.
What are the plans for Christmas? What are you going
to
be doing?
Don't have any big plans for Christmas. We went to Westport, Mass to my cousins, which was great for Thanksgiving. And our daughter will probably be here, but we have no big plan for Christmas.
Megan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Love Megan. She's one of my good friends.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
She randomly this summer, I was having a bad day, a really bad day. And out of nowhere, Megan, I was just getting ready I was on stage getting ready to start Disco Night. And I just had one of those days.
You were kind of like, if I have to.
Yeah, I was not feeling very, very disco-y. But, I'm a professional. I'm going to put the game face on and I'm going to do the Disco Night. I look over and Megan's on the side of the stage and she just goes like, she calls me over and she said, I found this a few months ago and I've had it and I've been waiting to give it to you. And it was a really cool poster that she had found because she's in the vintage game.
Yes.
And she had found a poster from a recording artist obscure local Boston recording artist that I had booked at the Block Island Music Festival when I ran that. And it was a really cool hand screened print of this recording artist. And she just thought of me and bought it and held onto it and gave it to me. I was so touched. It was really nice.
She turned the night around.
Yeah. She totally turned my night around. She's good like that.
She's a thoughtful kid.
She is.
And she was on set, I believe, for most of the time for the very first film I was ever in, The Island Bound with Lee.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Lee Medeiros. Yeah. Yeah. And she was there.
Yep.
That was probably the first time I actually got to know her.
A lot of people thought they were sisters.
Oh, yeah. You could see that. It could pass.
Short, dark hair, pretty.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Always telling me what to do.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's got to.
Yeah. That's right. If I don't have somebody telling me what to do, I'm not going anywhere.
Tell me about it.
Oh, my.
So what do you do for kicks these days?
Let's see. I'm going to Taco Tuesday tonight.
Oh, I might see you there.
I never ate a taco. I couldn't believe I could even utter the word.
Really?
Until someone told me, you have to go and taste Phil Walsh's tacos. Yeah. And I went, and I have a regular seat.
You're hooked.
Doosties.
You're in.
Yep.
There you go.
There's nothing negative about the statement, but the food there is like, you look at it and you think, oh, just a bar. But the food is so good.
He's phenomenal.
Fantastic.
He's phenomenal.
Never been disappointed with a meal there. You know,
the unfortunate thing for the patrons is the fact that there isn't anything after on Taco Tuesday. You can kind of push it to 6 or 6:30, but there's no dinner.
No,
at dinner time.
Right.
Because they
run
open
out.
At 11:30. They open.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
serve lunch and so forth and so on. Not like, you know, the barn or whatever that opens at 4 for booze and 5 for food.
Quick story as well. Quick tip. We're recording this in December. Today's Tuesday. Yesterday is Monday. I went out after we had finished working yesterday and, I knew the barn was closed. I had heard McAloon's was open, but I drove by. They were closed. So the Old Island Pub was the only game in town. I went in, and Carrie was behind the bar, and the kitchen was closed. I just found that out. But they had the grab-and-go food in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
I bought an Italian sandwich, a sub, and I'm like, okay, that'll do. At least, you know, something. I hadn't eaten all day. It was the best sandwich. Like, how good could a sandwich be? Look, I'm a connoisseur of the Italian sandwich, the Italian sub with the gabagol and the banana peppers and everything. And it's about the squishiness of the bread and the thickness of the meat and the quality of the meat and the and
more,
it didn't fall apart.
And more is not always better meat on an Italian.
It was the exact right amount. It was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
It saved my life yesterday. That Phil Walsh's Italian sandwich.
Yeah.
Highly recommend.
We should take measurements and put that out. A perfect Italian sandwich has 1 millimeter of pepperoni, 2 millimeters of prosciutto.
Exactly 7 banana peppers, no more, no less.
And I hate when I get an Italian and it's got like bologna on it.
Oh, yeah. No, mortadelle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got to be mortadelle.
Mordell.
Yeah.
Capagol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
He does.
He does. Well, that family, long history. His brother owned a bar and maybe he still does, but it was called the Bookstore Cafe. It was. It was in Providence. Yeah. It was one of the few places grandfathered in with a 3 a.m. hotel license, so they could serve drinks until 3 in the morning.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, well, somebody's got to do it.
Kelly had Juice and Java, ran Juice and Java for a long time.
Yeah, right? Kelly, in the early days, bartended at Sharky's.
Did she?
Yeah, she worked with, I worked with Kelly for a few years.
Oh, I remember
years.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great gal. Got to know the whole family.
Oh, Kelly's awesome.
Yeah.
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 Good bunch of folks.
And have you had the green crab bisque over there yet?
I've even bought it.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy a quart.
Yeah. It's good, right?
I bought. Oh, it's scrumptious.
Right?
For a crab that's really
an invasive species, by the way.
Bad thing. But the biscuits are delicious.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. He does some good stuff.
We don't do a lot. We do a lot with our friends. When we were younger, we entertained a lot. We don't do that anymore just because it's a lot of work. And
sure.
Dottie's the same age as I am. And she said, I can't get dinner for 10 people anymore because I can't do that.
I'm not. Yeah, you know, it's tough for right now. I don't like it either. I probably am being a big baby at my age, but it's work.
I live in Mystic, Connecticut. That's where home base is. And we used to throw for years since we moved into our house in 2007. Every New Year's, huge New Year's party. And, you know, COVID stopped that.
Yeah.
And now I'm 51 now. And I'm like, I'm over the entertaining. I'm it's a lot, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot. If you want to do it right.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot. It's a lot of work. So we go out whenever we have, of course, in the wintertime, there's not that much opportunity, but we go out a lot.
Yeah.
And we see our friends. And
well, if you ever want to visit Westerly, go stay at our little cottage in the Pine Lodge Village, a little nostalgic, over to go out to dinner. A lot of nice restaurants in Westerly now.
Are they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really up and coming. It's booming with nice restaurants.
What's
now.
That restaurant and you that's at, I'm trying to think of how to describe this. If you go, at the big four corners where the
Dunn's Corner.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you go forward into Western, you pass the bank with the Washington Trust Company, you keep going, yep. blah, 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 and you come to the juncture there where you make a left turn to go down into actually proper
Western.
Yep.
There's a restaurant right on that corner there.
Yeah, for a while it was actually called Capizano's.
Correct.
And then it became like a infused olive oil store for a little while, I think.
Yeah.
I want to say it's something like Ella's or Ella's.
Yeah, Ella's it is name. Like that. Yeah. We've been, we have not lately, but we had gone there a couple of times. It was quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a great spot just over the river. I think it may be technically considered Pawcatuck.
Yeah, Pawcatuck.
And called Hoof. You ever been to Hoof?
Oh, yeah. I've been to Hoof's.
Hoof.
Yep.
Oh, and it's very nice. You know, Italian and all the way, you know, really classic.
Is it right
style.
On the main drag there?
Yeah, right. If you go kind of down into the main heart of Westerly, but instead of going up by Perks and Corks and the thoroughfare up there, you just kind of keep going around this way.
It's just before that train overpass.
The bridge. The railroad bridge.
The railroad bridge. Before that on the right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
It's good. There's a lot of good spots, though. They're up and coming. You just let me know.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Mystic Westerly, both Mystic and Westerly have blown up.
Again. Yeah, we've always. Even, yeah, and we'll drive from Westerly down to Stonington, and it's only, you know, about, oh, I don't know, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes me.
And you said you were a flyer, which, you know, back in the day when you were commuting still and coming over.
Mark, I'm not a very good one. But
really?
But I did it.
You did it. But hey, when you got to get to Block Island, you got to get to Block Island.
Exit 73 on 95 coming up. Is the exit's called Society Road.
Oh, yes.
Always kind of appealed to me.
Yeah.
I open the flask there.
Is that where it starts?
Yeah. And so I'm ready for the
You've flask. Got it timed.
I absolutely. Perfect. Down to a
You're
day.
A pro.
Yeah.
The nerve deadener.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Get the, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, I'm not afraid. I'm not a big fan. I will. Yeah. I'll do it. You know, like you said, I'll do it if I need to or want to.
Oh, I did it weekend after weekend after weekend.
Yeah.
For a number of years.
Yeah.
And when we moved here, I think I've been on the plane.
Is that right?
Five times.
Yeah. So now that you have the time,
I take the boat.
Okay.
I think part of my problem is that I like flying. The convenience of it is amazing.
Well, there's no question about that
but
part.
Financially, it's you know, I like to go off with a quick overnighter, but to do that flying too many times, it runs the budget up too high. Can't afford it. So it I do find that I tend to end up flying when it's the only option because it's such a bad storm, the boats aren't running. So now all of my flight experiences are like the craziest, windiest, coldest.
So there's, yeah.
You know, I haven't taken one of those smooth, sunny sunset flights in a long time.
They're great.
Maybe that's what I need to do. I don't know how the work crews do it, like every morning and every night.
I know. I don't either.
A couple planes come over to Block Island every morning. There's at least two or three that are full of workmen. And then in the afternoon, that's their commute back.
In the old days, in the 80s, the pilots, remember Hardy?
No.
Great, big, tall, Nordic guy. A plane just flew by here that looked like it had pontoons on it.
It did, yeah.
It does,
yeah.
But it has wheels, too.
Yes.
He had one of those.
Oh, yeah.
And several of those pilots I got to know, and several of them I felt very safe with, and a couple of gals too who were really very competent and good.
They had Lynn, the woman with the long ponytail.
Yep,
she was fantastic. She had the little rhyme
beginning.
Safety instructions were a kind of a nursery rhyme.
She's the one that said that. I think I said it before. She said, "I came over on a flight. It was so windy, and it was across."
Yeah.
The runway, and before we take off, she literally goes, "Now when we get to Block Island," because that's how she talked, "when we get to the island, the left wheel of the plane is going to touch the ground about 30 seconds before the right wheel. I'm expecting that, and it's normal, so don't get nervous.
Yeah.
And I'm good up to that last sentence. Yeah. I'm going to have to get a little nervous. But yeah, and sure enough, we came in, and the one wheel's on the ground, and I'm waiting and waiting and waiting, and finally get the other wing to pop down, and it was like, she wasn't kidding, you know? But she knew it. She warned us ahead of time. I thought that was very nice, you know?
There's good. There are some good ones.
I would be more like, whatever happens, if one wheel's on the ground before the other, we got a big problem.
Yeah.
You know, scare the heck out of me.
Yep.
Well, what do you think? This has been a great conversation.
This has been fantastic.
Yeah. Have you enjoyed this a little bit?
Yes, I have. I don't know how much I contributed, but I feel good.
This has been just marvelous. I really...
Is there anything about Block Island you'd like to say or say hello to anyone?
Somebody just asked me, within the last couple of weeks... And I'm trying to think of who it was, whether it was somebody who was, I think it was somebody who was visiting or came for somebody's funeral or something. And she said to me, what is it about this place that has you so intoxicated? And I said,
vodka.
I have a new one too. I'll tell you about it. I said that the word is... safety. I feel very safe here.
Yeah.
And what's going on around this world, the 35 wars that are going on, and the television, I feel safe here.
I've been
hearing more and more people say, you know, they've lived here and they moved away. And I've heard more and more people are saying things like, I would really give anything to go back and live on Block Island now, because the world's getting to be a crazy place. Yeah. Even just safety in general, I just love that there's so many people that aren't even related to me. That, like you, David, you could call me and say, I have a problem, Rich, can you help me? And I'd come over and help you. Yeah, you know what I mean? I think that that's part of the safety is good, too. You just always feel
day-to-day
like
day-to-day safety. Not even loved safety ones around from you and the friends. Craziness of the world, just safety in the sense of having... something normal or just day-to-day stuff might happen.
And if the first six people aren't able to help you, there's number seven. You go right. You know, it's a long list, you know?
Yeah. We're very lucky in that way.
Yeah, we are. It's just so. Such a good community. So what did you say about vodka? You got a new one?
Yeah, I do. It's it's called Kiehl's, K-E-E-L.
Kiehl's. Kiehl's. Oh, yeah.
It's low alcohol. Uh-huh. Not too low.
Okay.
But... compared to the others,
just enough.
Right,
it's enough, and I'm just thrilled to death with it.
Okay, what is your drink? You're a martini guy?
No, I was.
Yeah, I feel as though I've definitely seen you with a martini in your hand.
When I was a young kid on that trip I mentioned on the Coronia in the North Cape with my parents, I met my mother in a bar after she had been to the hairdresser or something before we were. The sitting, I forget what the time of the sitting was at dinner, but I said, I'd meet you there when you get finished and so forth. And she came in and I never saw her on a bar stool in my life, but she did get on the bar stool and she looked at me and she went, what is that? I said, it's a gin martini. How long has that been going on? I said, I don't know. A while.
How long is that?
She said, "Well, I'm going. I'll say this for you. You're starting at the top.
Everything
pushing 88, and I'm still doing it.
There you go.
Everything you said about your mother is. What do you? The story on the way in the door. You said you decided to try a beard once. And it was your mom.
Yeah, exactly.
And what'd she say?
Yeah. What is that?
What kind is of thing, that
like? Like she didn't know I had a beard, you know, or even or could
grow one.
You know?
Right.
I'm not six, Mom.
Right. Where did that come from?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
So what is your drink now? Now that you're in the Kiehl's, what do you do with it?
I have the first two straight up.
Okay.
And
rocks or
I think
just straight?
I think I'm talking too much.
Oh no!
Look, we're just talking. You don't have to give numbers.
People are going to hear this.
It's fine.
Yeah, that's
then
all right.
After that, I have them on the rocks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good but work. There's a distinct difference. Some people think they're a lot of nothing.
Yeah.
That I know, friends of mine think they're a lot of nothing. They're perfect for me.
Great. Yeah. Listen, cocktails are important, in my opinion, having been in the restaurant bar business for a long time.
Essential.
Essential. Thank
that
you.
That might even...
Thank
I,
you.
I might even try this Kiehl's because you know, my love of the high octane martini or, you know, straight beverage, I'm not quite capable of that anymore. I don't feel well after, you know, four of those.
They have it. Terry and Nat order it for the OIP, for the Old Island Pub.
Yep.
Kimberly has it. The Manasseh's either have it or she'll send someone from the restaurant over to the other restaurant.
Oh, because Kimberly runs the oyster bar, too.
To get it.
Yeah.
And I think I have a jug at the barn, too. Any kind of.
I'm going to try to go to each place and beat you to it. So when you get there, it's gone.
Yeah.
What happened? Was Rich here? You
know? That's you mean. Know, that's just mean.
You know, it says a lot when somebody will go and get one for you, like you just said. That right. says a lot about you, my friend.
Yeah.
Well, they usually have it, but if they don't, they'll run and get me a bottle.
I hope I didn't overspeak, but
I don't think that's so. Happened.
I don't think so.
Nah, we don't. No. That's nothing.
I think you. Yeah. I think everything you've said was right on the money.
This entire interview is a level two compared to some of the tens that people have heard us talk about.
Oh,
so you're in good hands, and our listeners are going
to two is like next to one
safety. Like no, I mean I don't mean in quality. Quality, this is a 12.
Yeah,
but I mean in what's the word I'm looking for? Gentle, you know,
class,
classy. Yeah,
I would dare say I feel like Mr. Graham has kind of infused in a little bit of class into this podcast.
Definitely,
this is one of the classier. Episodes.
Don't flatter me too much. I'll come back.
You're always welcome.
Just bring the Keels with you, and you're welcome.
And Dottie.
Back. And Dottie.
Yeah,
Mark, I've gone many summers. I've gone to hear you play.
Ah.
At 9?
Depends when which day. We do a Sunday afternoon thing with the band.
Yeah.
The piano.
Piano
thing,
bar.
Though. No, right. Yeah. I've seen you at the piano bar for a number of times. Yeah, we don't do that anymore on the second floor like we used to.
I'm a huge Cole Porter person.
Oh, I love Cole Porter.
And I have instructions. I don't know if they'll follow it, but when they take me out of the church, I want them to play You're the Top.
All right.
The Coliseum.
Yeah.
You're the Top. You're the Louvre Museum.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if we're still alive, we could have you do it, Mark.
Hey, I'm game for anything.
We'll say whatever. They'll probably say, thank God he's gone. We can do what we please.
I don't think so.
I don't think anyone's going to be saying that.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Well, I thank you guys.
Well, thank you.
And listeners, as always, thank you for checking out our podcast. We really enjoy having you listen to our guests and their stories. Reach out to us, please, anytime, anything, comments, questions, ideas. twoguysonbi@gmail.com is our email.
And please feel free to follow us on all of the social media stuff, whether it's Facebook or Instagram, and whatever platform you listen to us on, hit the subscribe button. And most importantly, just tell your friends about us.
Yes, that's how. That's the best way to spread the word.
Spread the love. Yeah,
spread it out. We appreciate it. All right, I'll see you next time.
Okay, see ya. Hey, Rich.
What's up?
I have a jug of Kiehl's vodka right here. Let's go make some martinis.
Okay.
And let's go get some graham crackers. And
rent a house.
And rent a house.
Okay. We can cover this whole interview in one evening.
Okay.
Can we bring some Taco Tuesday with us?
Let's stop by there first.
Okay.
Let's go pick up Dave and bring him with us.
Yeah, it sounds good. Okay. Sounds like a party.
Okay, see ya. Oh, and one last thing. Whether you're a local or just visiting Block Island, pick up a copy of The Block Island Guy. Published annually for the last 35 years, it features 120 pages full of killer photos and all the details you need to know. Most importantly, it's fun to read. What shall we do with the drunken sailor? What shall we do with the drunken sailor? What shall we do with the drunken sailor?